Thanks, Ken. I missed when that's going to be going on, the piece you just read to us, the announcement you just read. When is that occurring in the sanctuary? Sorry, I'm a bit scattered at the moment. Oh, next Sunday. Okay. Okay, thanks. If I'm not literally writing things down these days, I swear, I mean, I just can't remember anything from moment to moment. And so, yeah, unless I'm checking the schedule or really somehow placing my attention on a decision to remember it, I just don't. It just comes and goes. And so, thanks for sharing that. I like the idea of the integration of our human aspect with our divine self. For me at least, it just feels more all-encompassing. I think that for me in the past, I was maybe kind of I would say not in a fully loving mode towards, form and humanness and all the foibles that kind of go along with that. But I think there is a loving place where that can be looked at, from the watcher standpoint, and, have compassion come into play and acceptance of a condition that we manufactured and now try to maintain through our, various means, mostly because we think it's, our survival depends on it, and to some degree the human form does. And so, yeah, I know that A Course of Love, which Carrie Christensen, our wonderful minister this morning, has been reading. For gosh, I think we've been reading that book. I don't know. I'm going to say at least a year. Maybe it's 2 years. Time gets away from me, I swear. My husband said to me this morning, tomorrow, tomorrow, a couple of days, it's August already. It's like, whoa, I don't even know where July went. It went so quickly, it seemed. And now I lost my train of thought. At any rate, we're here today. Oh yeah, Reverend Carrie Christensen, I was saying, was addressing so many things that were helpful to me today, and I love the spontaneity of her sharing that she was able to step away from getting worked up about not being prepared. As in, thinking ahead of time what I'm going to say. I don't really do that either. Sometimes I'll catch myself going off track and maybe starting with a contemplation of something I've heard and then having that extrapolate into something that I'm going to share in the future. So I do notice that for myself as well, but I felt Carrie's sharing to be very loving and spontaneous and helpful. And we're here to do the same with the book we've been reading from for the book I've been reading from. This is my second time through. It's called Experience Your Perfect Soul, and it's a joyful path to self-realization. And we are in the section, the new section, which is chapter 3, and it's the Joel S. Goldsmith section. And the following quotes by Joel Goldsmith are from the book The Infinite Way. And so the quotes taken from The Infinite Way by Michael Langford are those being shared here as direct path quotes in his book called Experience Your Perfect Soul. And so I just want to welcome everybody that's in the room and maybe listening on the radio. I call this sharing no fluff, And that's just my simpleton words about how I see the direct path quotes. They feel like concise, direct. There's nothing added onto it to, like embellish it. It's kind of like jewelry on a person. Adding more than is needs to be there for whatever reason. And so this book doesn't feel like that to me. It feels very stripped down to the core essence of maybe what I need to hear. So that's why I call this no fluff. At any rate, I'm going to begin the reading, trusting that what I read is for my highest good, for myself. I need to hear it first and foremost. And yeah, happy to share it as well. So the great secret is the great secret is that despite all belief to the contrary, real power, either for good or evil, does not reside in matter or in the material sense of man and the universe. Those who have acquired some degree of spiritual consciousness have proved, in that measure, the reality of spirit. The necessity for giving up the material sense of existence for the attainment of the spiritual consciousness of life and its activities is the secret of all see is the secret of the seers, prophets, and saints of all ages. Be assured, inner peace will come as one turns to the spiritual consciousness of life, and an outer calm will follow in one's human affairs. So again, be assured, and Barb had, when Barb was reading from Robert Adams, I noted an assurance in there that he was also sharing that, you will wake up to your divine self because it is the truth of who you are. You could never have lost it except in your imagination or your dreaming. And, that's the illusion. We know that it's not even really going on at all. It's just part of the dream. So we are assured. We are assured underneath the dreaming state is the inner peace, the peace that is the foundation of all that is. Like Barb was sharing from Robert Adams, conscious, what is consciousness? Consciousness is all that is. There's nothing, seemingly outside of or inside of consciousness. Consciousness is itself, it's all that is. And this is saying, be assured, inner peace will come as one turns to the spiritual consciousness of life. Not that material sense of man and the universe consciousness, where consciousness seems to be misapplied to the outer experience or the outer objects or the outer sense of the human side, the seeing with the eyes, not vision as A Course in Miracles speaks to vision. It has nothing to do with the body's eyes. And so this spiritual consciousness of life, focus on that, this willingness to turn to that. And in Karen Worth's meditation this morning, which was very beautiful, by the way, Karen, if you're here, yeah, I see you're here. I really enjoyed your meditation and your instruction about simply, when you notice thought, just once again, when you notice thought, simply turn away from the thought and turn towards that inner peace, that spiritual consciousness of life that is the watcher. That's not trying to get rid of anything or keep anything. It simply watches, unaffected. And when we can stand in that spiritual consciousness of life, not only in our, sit down meditations, maybe with eyes closed, but also, in Michael Langford's Loving All, which is, an open-eyed form of meditation, the outer calm in our human affairs, it is more maybe viscerally felt, or maybe even seen with the body's eyes, where we find ourselves looking beyond someone's behavior, maybe a behavior that we've seen 1,000 times and have been upset at, 999 out of 1,000 times. But there's one time where we notice that same behavior and we say, it is what it is. The only reason I'm upset is because I'm attaching a belief to it, a mental structure around it, a past association with it, a mental activity. I'm looking to the mind to help me see this the same way I've seen it 999 out of 1,000 times, but not this time. Because the behavior may never change in the someone else. But I can change my mind about how I'm going to look at that behavior or beyond that behavior to the Christ, to the spiritual consciousness of life, which I share as life itself. So be assured, inner peace will come as one turns to the spiritual consciousness of life, and an outer calm will follow in one's human affairs. The authority for all of this revelation will be you, as you experience this change within and without. And this is called putting on immortality. The seeker of truth begins his search with a problem, perhaps many problems. The day arrives, however, when he perhaps discovers that the application of truth to human problems either does not work, or does not work as it once did, or else he finds there is now less of satisfaction and inspiration in his study. Eventually, he is led to the great revelation that mortals put on immortality only as mortality disappears. They do not add immortal spiritual harmony to human conditions. When we leave the realm of human betterment, we catch the first glimpse of the meaning of, I have overcome the world. And I'll stop there because it makes me think of that term that's, self-esteem, self-esteem. Certainly our conditioning in a collective sense, in a societal sense, is, to boost your self-esteem or to boost someone else's self-esteem. And it's, we don't stop to ask, who is the I that needs boosting? What is the purpose behind this praising? I once had some a counselor when my kids were younger, and I was struggling as a parent to just deal with two very strong-minded kids. I went to some counseling sessions, seeking some help or some maybe suggestions on what I might change. And one of the suggestions at that time was to write each of my kids a letter, letting them know the various ways that they were endearing to me. And I did that. And like lo and behold, it turned into a comparison between the kids. And mom likes you because, you know, and mom said this about you, and she didn't say this about me. And it like so backfired. It was just like one of those, and that's that human betterment where, you know, we're praising not the foundational truth of all of us, which needs no praise. We're praising the form, the belief in the body, the behavior, the following the rules person, the goody, or maybe not so good one. That's the realm of human betterment. And you know, that can go on forever and ever. And ever, amen, because there's no end to that. That's what I typed on the board this morning when my husband had said it's like that dopey game, bop, where you bop the mole. I mean, the mole jumps up in some other hole. There's no seeming end to the problems in the external world. It's not like there's ever going to be this ceasing of every aggravation to, you know, huge seeming problem. It's not that that ever ends. It's how we choose to think about it or not think about it, how we choose to release those thoughts that come into the mind that want to pile on to these seeming, you know, mortal problems. And that's why this starts out by saying, you know, the seeker of truth begins his search with a problem, perhaps many problems. The day arrives, however, when he perhaps discovers that the application of truth to human problems either doesn't work or doesn't work as it once did, or else he finds there's now less of satisfaction and inspiration in his study. Eventually, he's led to the great revelation that mortals put on immortality only as mortality disappears. They don't add immortal spiritual harmony to human conditions. When we leave the realm of human betterment, we catch the first glimpse of the meaning of, I have overcome the world. We have not overcome the world while we are seeking to have less of the world's pains and more of the world's pleasures and profits. Yeah, we've just switched our focus. Our focus is still on the world, though, either way, pain or pleasure. And then A Course in Miracles tells us we're absolutely confused about what pain is and what pleasure is. We don't even know the difference there. Spiritual consciousness overcomes the world, both the pains and pleasures of the world. When confronted with any human problem, instead of laboring for an improved human condition, turn from the picture and realize the presence of the divine spirit in you. You know, turn from the picture, that picture that starts up in your mind, that picture. And I don't know if you guys see pictures in your mind or not. You know, certainly when I have a story going on in my mind, It doesn't feel like I'm visibly seeing my thoughts. It's not like I see words in my head, but there's a rattle going on of some sort. There's something going on there that the watcher, that's where we're asked to remain. The watcher can notice that without being involved. And that's where we're being asked to redirect that attention that wants to get sucked into the storyline. Sucked into the initial thought, which might be some sort of a constriction or some sort of where you catch your breath, where you notice a judgment happen immediately, where you find yourself wanting to stick your two cents in there, where you feel emotional, where, all those ways that we're distracted away from the silence and the calm peace of the watcher. It says, when confronted with any human problem, instead of laboring for an improved human condition, turn from the picture, turn from the human condition, turn from the thoughts about the human condition, and realize the presence of the divine spirit in you. That's maybe just a time to take 3 to 5 seconds to rest, accept, and trust this divine presence that might not feel like your best friend yet, or the most dominant. That word was used this morning from A Course in Miracles, from our lesson that Carrie talked about, the word dominance. Excuse me. Let me grab a drink of water here. Yeah, and she was using, I don't think it was necessarily today's lesson. I think she was speaking to either yesterday's lesson or the day before. Hang on a minute. Oh yeah, here it is. It was from I choose the joy of God instead of pain. There is nothing in the world that has the power to make you ill or sad or weak or frail. But it is you who have the power to dominate all things you see by merely recognizing what you are. And that's where, and I remember Jacqueline posted from the Bible that a passage that you have dominion over all things. And I don't know what part of the Bible that's from, because I'm not a Bible, I don't know the Bible well. But that the sense of that watcher, that is the one who reigns in that space that we might say of dominance. But it's not a dominance as understood by the human mind in any way, shape, or form. I mean, that's a completely different interpretation. And so I love when a word like dominance is used or retranslated to show us strength about the truth of who we really are. That capital S self, the love that I am, the isness, the beingness, the watcher, the seer, the one whose presence remains calm. That one. And we're being asked to realize that presence of the divine spirit in us each time we find ourselves confronted with a problem. So we are living in a spiritual universe, but the finite sense has set a picture before us of limitation. While thought is on the picture before us, yeah, for sure. While thought is on the picture before us, quote, this world. We are engaged in the constant effort to improve or change it. As soon as we lift our vision, take thought off what we shall eat and drink and wear, we begin to behold spiritual reality, which appears to us as improved beliefs, but which really is more appearing of reality. And that more appearing is more dash appearing, you know, appearing, as if those words are intimately connected. So again, this sentence says, as soon as we lift our vision and we take thought of what we shall eat and drink and wear, we begin to behold spiritual reality, which appears to us as improved beliefs, but which really is more appearing of reality. This more appearing reality brings with it joys untold here and now. How frequently, and you know, I forgot to mention, and we're like a half hour in, I'm on page 69 right now in case anybody has experienced your perfect soul and wants to read along. I apologize for forgetting the page. Top of page 69, Joel Goldsmith. How frequently do we attempt to understand spiritual wisdom with our human intellect? Yeah, all the time, at least in my case. This leads to mental indigestion because we are attempting to digest spiritual food with our educated mentality. It will not work. Truth is not a reasoning process. Therefore, it must be spiritually discerned. Instead of trying to make spirit operate upon our human bodies and material affairs, let us learn to disregard these mortal pictures and keep our vision on things above. That reminds me of above the battleground. When we, quote, come down to earth again, end quote, we shall find the discords and limitations of sense disappearing and more of reality appearing. So, you know, the way that feels to me, it's like each time I allow myself to rest in the truth of who I am, the truth of, you know, my beingness, the realness of self, each time I step into that fully, when I step out of it, those times, at least how it feels to me, will become less and less, and more of reality will be appearing because I have a willingness to spend more of time, more of my time with reality. If I spend time with reality, I will probably experience reality. If I spend time in the illusion, I will probably experience the illusion. So where do I want to spend my time? But it says, you know, when we come down to earth again, we find the discords disappearing. We find the limitations of sense disappearing. and more of reality appearing. So that gets strong, and that's why we're assured. We're assured that we will come to be intimately aware of this truth of self. Note here that the development of spiritual consciousness results in a greater gift of feeling the harmony of being. We understand that neither seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, nor smelling, and those are those limitations of sense we just talked about. So we understand that neither seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, nor smelling will reveal spiritual truth or its harmonies to us. Therefore, it must come through a different faculty, the intuitive faculty, which acts through feeling. Heretofore, we have sat down to pray or to meditate, and immediately a stream of words and thoughts started to flow. Perhaps we began to affirm truth and deny error. You can see that this is wholly in the realm of the human mind. In cultivating our spiritual sense, we become receptive to thoughts which come to us from within. We become hearers of the word rather than speakers. We become hearers of the word rather than speakers. So, you know, the word heretofore is like such a weird word to me. It's, you know, it seems like such, and to me, all it simply means is, you know, kind of like before, you know, before now, this is what we used to do that we've, or we may even be doing it now, but he's saying heretofore, we've been concerned with the letter of truth. Now only with the spirit of truth. So before it might have been an intellectual knowing of truth or a, you know, the studying of doctrines or creeds or, you know, various teachings, whatever, you know, the letter of truth, not the direct experience, which is the spirit of truth. So again, heretofore, we've been concerned with the letter of truth. Now, only with the spirit of truth. We want the direct experience. We are not so concerned now with what is truth as with feeling truth. And that's that direct experience, where it's not just talking about it. It's literally knowing it in a visceral sense, having the direct experience. This is accomplished in proportion as we give less thought to the letter and more receptivity to the feel. This word feel, incidentally, refers also to the awareness, consciousness, or a sense of truth. So we could say, you know, we're not concerned now with what is truth. We're concerned with feeling truth. And this is accomplished in proportion as we give less thought to the letter and more receptivity to the feel, which is also, we give more receptivity to awareness, we give more receptivity to consciousness, we give more receptivity to a sense of truth. Those are all the same, all referring to the same thing. We are illumined Only as we are receptive and responsive to spiritual illumination. We understand immortality when we think of it as the immortality of the human personality or personal sense. So again, we misunderstand immortality when we think of it as the immortality of the human personality or personal sense. Death does not produce immortality or end personal sense. Nor does the continuation of human existence mean the attainment of immortality. Immortality is attained in proportion as personal sense is overcome, whether here or hereafter. As we put off the personal ego and attain the consciousness of our real self, the reality of us, divine consciousness, we attain immortality. And that can be achieved here and now. The desire to perpetuate our false sense of body and wealth ensnares us into death or mortality. The desire to perpetuate our false sense of body and wealth ensnares us into death or mortality. The first step in the attainment of immortality is living out from the center of our being, as in the idea of unfoldment from within rather than accretion, accretion. And I think that means like getting, accumulating. It is the giving, and that's in italics, giving. It is the giving sense rather than getting, being rather than attaining. And certainly we're all familiar with A Course in Miracles to the extent that, you know, many, many lessons speak to have all, give all to all, to give and to receive are the same in truth. All that I give to myself. If you can think of any more, type them on the board, but there's lots of them. It is the giving sense rather than the getting, because of course the world says just the opposite. If I give a thing away, I lose it. And the Course says, we cannot gain except by giving, and there is no loss associated in the giving, because everything is an idea, only an idea in the mind of God, and it's a loving idea, and ideas extend themselves. And if it's all love to begin with, if it's all consciousness as love, where is the loss? Where would the loss come in? There's no such thing as loss in love. In love is all there is. So where is the idea of loss entering from? Where is it coming into play? Who is inventing this notion of, you know, giving is loss? And it of course the ego says, if I have $100 and I give $100 to you, I don't have the $100 anymore. And that is a fact. I don't have the $100 anymore. It's not about the form. The ego always wants to turn it into a form thing. And now I don't have $100 and I can't buy groceries this week. So why would I give that to you? Its whole motto is, get more of something, and it doesn't really care, more of what, just more of something. And so now we're being asked to, again, turn 180 degrees in the opposite direction and have some faith that giving, the giving sense rather than the getting, is where the joy is, the being rather than the attaining. That, the idea of attaining seems to, at least for me, have some sort of, Jesus climbing the ladder or straining or trying to get somewhere or do something or, just like laboring to get someplace that you're not already. Where being for me is that it feels restful, that just the word just be with what is right here, right now. That's all there is anyway, no matter what you think or do. So it is the giving sense rather than the getting, being rather than attaining. In this consciousness, there is no condemnation, judgment, hatred, or fear, but rather a continuous feeling of love and forgiveness. Love and forgiveness. And Regina, I think, and I could be wrong, but I think when I was reading the tip for today, she talked about forgiveness. And I think she used it in the sense of being equal to awareness, like awareness watching awareness, where when you're in that space of awareness, there's real nothing to forgive. You're in that watcher presence, that seer presence, that space of silence that it speaks to, that listener that's willing to receive from the mind of God whatever it is that may be shared in a spoken form. But what I'm speaking to here is just resting in that awareness that understands in a as reality that there's nothing to forgive ultimately. There's nothing really going on because it's not attached at all to any sort of external picture that does not exist as reality. It's only in the dream. But the benevolence of that foundation, and its compassion and kindness, for those of us that are not completely rested in the arms of God all the time, is pointing to the fact that it exists. It truly does exist, this reality, this joy, this immortality, this happiness, this self of love that you are. And it's sharing with us that this consciousness that we come to know deeper and deeper and deeper by simply resting there, and it's revealed to us. In that space, there's no condemnation, no judgment, no hatred, no fear. It's just a continuous feeling of love and forgiveness. So we keep turning back to that each time we notice, all of the other thought processes that reflect those other things. If we notice those trying to distract us, we simply, become better at catching it quicker and quicker and more, thereby giving our time more willingly and more often over to the truth of who we are, and then we experience what reality is. We're driven from that in a receptive mode by our willingness to stay there. Says it's not a simple matter to show forth the joy and peace of immortality, because to those intent on preserving their present concepts of being, immortality would appear to be extinction. So there's that acknowledgement, you know, it's not a simple matter to seemingly give up this attachment to an to a false identity that I made. You know, the course teaches us it's like a, you know, it's like our baby. We made it. And so, you know, we've been nurturing it, to some degree or another, keeping it alive. And now we're being asked to withdraw all of our attention from that and turn towards what, you know, may feel to be the unknown, this, you know, immortality, and erase any thought of death associated with, you know, the word even immortality. Does something have to die to experience immortality? And the ego would tell you, oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Yep. And that's why he says it's not a simple matter to show forth the joy and peace of immortality, because to those intent on preserving their present concepts of being, immortality would appear to be extinction. This is not the case. It is the eternal preservation of all that is real, fine, noble, harmonious, gracious, unselfish, and peaceful. It is reality brought to light in place of the illusion of sense. The illusion of sense. You know, how often do you find yourself saying this doesn't make sense? I was driving with my husband in the car yesterday, and we were speaking of some politics, and he was aware of his, and he said verbally, I am aware of my frustration around the absolute madness I see with what's going on politically, and the divide that seems to be seems to have even exacerbated beyond what the last administration was experiencing. It seems to be the gap has widened, and that he was expressing an opinion that it feels as if the fringes of society, our the very few that we might say are on the extremes of the spectrum of humanity, it seems as if that is the focus of most of our attention, while this huge middle ground that he feels makes up a majority is being, you know, mostly ignored, and the complete insanity of how that feels to have such a large portion of the population seemingly kind of maybe disregarded or not listened to, or I don't really know. He just was noticing his frustration and trying to, he said, and you know, I keep trying to make sense out of it. And we had some conversation about, you know, the course and what it says about, you know, it's these are the laws of chaos there will never be any sense. And I pointed, I pointed to the fact that these are still our own opinions, even if we feel a righteousness around what we think we see, or a righteousness on how we interpret what's going on, or a quote more sensible intellectual maybe looking at a set of circumstances. It still is madness. It still is manufactured by a mind listening to thoughts based on a perception that is skewed and limited, always, always. And we're being asked to turn away from that and ask within, how am I to see this? What would you have me see in this situation that I am not seeing? Whatever question you want to ask yourself to move from the space of trying to make sense out of chaos, which cannot be done, and there's no peace there, to this, spiritual illumination, where we're asked to receive, to listen, to ask some sort of, maybe self-inquiry question if we find ourselves, frustrated. And so it's telling us the eternal preservation of all that's real, all that's fine, all that's noble, all that's harmonious, all that's gracious, all that's unselfish and peaceful. I mean, God, isn't that the picture we would rather see than the frustration of the picture we see based on our, observation of what's going on? Isn't that the picture we want? This eternal, eternally preserved reality, that this light that can be brought to the mind in place of all the other madness, the illusion of sense, isn't that what we're really asking for? What we really want? Yeah, it's a selfishness and conceit fall away in the realization of the divinity of our being. Selfishness and conceit fall away in the realization of the divinity of our being. Spiritual illumination, spiritual illumination enables us to discern the spiritual reality where the human concept appears to be. Spiritual sense discerns the reality of that which is appearing as concept. The development of spiritual consciousness begins with our first realization that what we are beholding through the senses of sight, hearing, taste, touch, and smell is not the reality of things. Disregarding appearances entirely, the first ray of spiritual illumination brings us hints of the divine, hints of the eternal, hints of the immortal. This in turn makes the appearance even less real to us, thereby admitting even greater illumination. Our progress, spiritward, is in proportion to the illumination which enables us to behold more and more of reality. because the human seen is entirely a misconception through misperception. Any thought of helping, correcting, or changing the material picture must be relinquished in order that we may see the ever-present reality. And again, I'm going to reread that last sentence. Because the human seen is entirely a misconception through misperception, any thought of helping, correcting, or changing the material picture must be relinquished. We have to give it up in order that we may see the ever-present reality. Spiritual illumination comes to us in a measure with our first investigation of truth. We believe that we are seeking good or truth. The light has begun to shine in our consciousness, compelling us to take the steps we have since taken. Every increase of our spiritual understanding was more light appearing and dispelling the darkness of sense. Illumination first brings peace, then confidence and assurance. It brings rest from the world's contests. And then all good flows to us through grace. We see now that we do not live by acquiring, gaining, or achieving. The pleasures and successes of the world are as nothing compared with the joys and treasures which now unfold to us through spiritual sense. In the light of truth, the greatest earthly happiness and triumph are as nothing, whereas the treasures of soul have a glory unknown and unfathomed by sense. Spiritual illumination reveals the harmony of being and dispels the evidence of material sense. This is but the beginning of this vast subject. And while we are discussing it, let us keep thought removed as far as possible from the world of sense and anchored in the conscious awareness of spiritual reality. And that's a great place to stop. My time is up. I thank you for listening. Next week, we will begin on page 75 in the Joel Goldsmith section of Experience Your Perfect Soul. And thank you for being here with me. Have a great day. Look for the miracles, guys. See ya.